Okay, so let's just review the let's just review for a second the setup that I want to define. Okay, in other words, let's put aside how they come to the conclusion through the drush. Let's just understand that you have three positions. Okay, in other words, we know that there is an obligation for the Kohen to write down, as the Torah says, the alos in a Megillah. Okay, we know that, and then he's going to put the Megillah, the Megillah is going to go into the water, right? And then she's going to drink the water, okay? That we know. So the question is, what the Mishnah and the Gemara are struggling with is what belongs inside the Megillah. So Rav Meir, let's deal with Rav Yossi first. Rav Yossi says, well, what goes in there is the tzivuos, right? Which are the commandments, the alos, which is all the curses and everything like that, the Shavuos, and the Kabbalah, which is her saying, Amen, Amen. All that goes into the Megillah. Rav Meir says, no, we don't include the Tzivoy or the Kabbalah in the Megillah. We just stick to Alos, but he learns the Alos to mean both the actual overt bad things that will happen to her and the inferred bad things that will happen to her. And then finally, you have Rav Yehuda, who says that all you put in is the overt bad things that are going to happen to her, okay? It's a very difficult machlokas, all right? Very difficult machlokas. So what did you guys come up with? How do you define this machlokas? So let's understand the problem that's facing these different opinions here, okay? The Torah says, v'chasav ha'alos sa'ela, right? Es'alos sa'ela, okay? Okay. So the question is, what does that mean? Okay, meaning there's obviously something cryptic about the use in the Torah of the word alos that's leading to this debate, okay? But I think there's an underlying issue that they're both discussing, right? That is manifest in how they ended up darshaning out whether it's exclusive or inclusive. And we'll go to the exclusive-inclusive next in the Gemara, because that's what the Gemara is bothered by, okay? But let's just understand. There's on a simple level, forget the drush, okay? In other words, the Kohen has to write something in the Megillah. And the Torah says, write the Alos, okay? So there's going to be two ways you could look at what we mean by Alos here, okay? What's the simplest way of looking at Alos? Meaning, what does God want the Kohen to write in the Megillah? What does Alos mean? Well, just say curses, okay? Forget explicit for a second. Don't worry about that, right? Meaning, God says, write the following content down, right? Which content is the Kohen supposed to write down? The content he writes down is the curses. So if Alos is being directed at a content, so what should the Kohen write down? Curses, and that's it. We'll get to what the difference is between overt and implied, okay? But one way to look at it is, God's instruction is, write this down. What are you writing down? This content, which is curses, okay? That would limit you to simply, whatever the actual curses are, we're going to Megillah. But there's another way to look at it. It's going to be a little different than what Sean's saying, but I think you're going to agree with me in the end. I'm just going to put it in a different context, okay? I think what you're trying to say is, yeah, but the reality of an alos can only come about through a tzivoy and a kabbalah. Meaning, what are you writing down? You're writing down a halachic institution of alos, okay? And the halachic institution of alos is manifest in two ways, okay? It's manifest through the tzivoy, because what does the tzivoy do? That initiates the reality of the alos. And then what's the culmination, or what brings the alos into reality? The Kabbalah, right? That's the halachic institution of alos. So the question is, what's the Torah referring to when it says alos? Is God saying the content? If it's content-based, then all you write down are the curses. But if he's talking about the halachic reality of alos, well, that's going to require the tzivoy and the Kabbalah, because the tzivoy is what now brings the alos into existence, right? And then what's the culmination? Through her Kabbalah. If he's not mekabel it, then what halachic idea of alos is there to speak of? So that's the other way to look at alos, okay? The tzivoy is the initiator, and the Kabbalah is the koveah. In other words, again, when the Torah says ha'alos, okay, and meaning the Kohen is obligated to write something down in this Megillah. What's he supposed to be writing down? So the Torah says alos. So there's two ways you can look at what that means. If God is saying alos as a content-based idea, meaning write this down, this information, So what information you write down, the curses, okay? But the other way to say is, no. There's a certain halachic idea of alos here, that the alos only obtain a reality because they're part of a greater halachic institution. So that halachic institution has to be reflected in what's being written down. So you'd have to write down both the Yishbiyahu Asah Kohen, which is the initiator of the alos, and then her acceptance of it, because her Kabbalah is the koveya of the alos. So both those things would have to be included as well. Or as I think what Sean was kind of getting at, it would be an incomplete picture of the alos without both the initiator and the koveya. Together, in it, as a whole, they make the alos into a reality. If you're missing one of them, it's not alos anymore. From a drush standpoint, they both work out perfectly. Because one side, let's say I agree with you, right? Let's say they say baseline, you would include all three. But one second, the Torah says ha'alos. Well, maybe the fact it's saying that is telling you don't look at it as the halachic institution of alos, rather look at it as simply a content-based thing. Whereas the other side would say, no, you could look at it as a reboy, meaning that it shouldn't be a content-based idea, it should be the halachic institution idea. You can, I'm not using this in a negative way, you can manipulate the drush to fit each side. In fact, that's exactly what's going to bother the Gemara in a second. Right, they're manipulating the drush. But the point is, either way you go, this idea will work out. Now the Gemara goes on. Now the Gemara wants to understand, okay, well, this is kind of what I think Yosef is bothered by, but let the Gemara flesh this out. The Gemara is bothered by, like, well, it sounds like there's a game here, because they're playing around with these hays. Is the hay a riboy? Is the hay a miyot? Right? What's it doing? Okay? So what does the Gemara say? The Gemara says, V'rebi Meir, okay, Maishna hai hay demirabi bay, okay, which is the hay of ha'alos, which he says is a riboy, umaishna hay hai hay demai bay. And then how is it that the other hay is being functioning as a miyot? Okay, meaning Rebbe Meir can't have it both ways. You can't say that the hay for ha'alos is a riboy, meaning it's inclusive, but then the hay for Ha'ela is a miyot, is exclusive. Okay? What kind of thing is that? So the Gemara says, Hey degabe de ribuya ribuyahi. Okay? So the Gemara says, you're right. Okay? So what does that mean? It means when the hey is coming next to a word, it is there to function as a ribuy. Okay? Hey degabe de miyuta, miyuta. Okay? One second. Sorry, we have to define the machlokas or Meir of Yehuda first. Oh my God. So what's the machlokas now between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda? Okay, meaning now, hold on. Rav Meir says that alos, in other words, they both agree it's content. Now Rav Meir says, well, when it comes to content, not only do we do the overt content, but even the implied content, which is very strange. Whereas Rav Yehuda says no. Rav Yehuda says that whatever is the overt content, that's the only thing that should be included. Why would you ever include an implied content? So okay, good. Yeah, sorry. In other words, let's assume for now that we agree that Rav Meir and Yehuda agree that when it says ha'alos, that's a content-based idea. Okay. Now, if God is telling you to write down the content, okay, so Rav Yehuda is the easiest position, right? Why is Rav Yehuda the easiest position? Because if God says write down the content, that means He wants you to replicate the alos. If you're replicating the alos, then you're going to limit yourself to simply whatever an alos is. The pasuk that says ve'at kilosatis, right, is not an alos. It has to be an actual alos. Okay, an overt alos means you're duplicating what's written in the Torah, right? So God's telling you all you can do is put down the actual curse itself. What's implied things are very nice, but that's not a duplication. So one way to look at taking the contents of the alos and putting the Megillah, so look at it through the perspective of, is this a duplication? If it's a duplication, you limit yourself to simply the overt curses, okay? But it's interesting. I think what you guys are hinting at, I think, is another way to look at the alos, but to look at the Megillah in a different way. And this is going to be critical. This point is going to be critical to understanding not the next part of the Gemara, but we start doing the area of the writing of the Megillah, okay? This Megillah is a very, very strange thing. Why is this Megillah so strange? What makes the Megillah Sota such an odd idea? I know it's not fair to ask it that way, but what makes it such an odd concept? There's something very strange by the Megillah Sota. What makes the Megillah Sota such an odd thing? More than that, let me ask you a question. Imagine I told you I'm writing you a book, right? And then before I give it to you, I erase all the letters, okay? That is what I would call a non-functional book, right? I mean, it undermines what a book is, right? You'll see this is one of the pivotal points to understand. There's an amazing idea here, which we're going to flesh out later on, not today, I'm saying later on in this sugya, which is that on the one hand, this is a Megillah in a safer sense. So what do you have to do? You have to put in content, right? So Rav Yehuda is going to say that content should simply be replicating what's ever in the Torah, right? But there's another, but what's this Megillah doing? What's the objective of the Megillah? What's it there to do? Not to be read. What's it there to do? In other words, but the Megillah is that which is going to produce judgment on the woman. That the Megillah combined with the water, she drinks the water, and then her judgment comes about. So that's the function of the Alos, right? And functionally speaking, there are two outcomes that could emerge. There is, what could happen? She could be okay, and she could also die, right? So that's the other position. There's Rav Yehuda saying, replicate the content, okay? He's looking at the Megillah from the perspective of, it's a sefer, so replicate whatever the content is and put it in there. But there's another way you could talk about content. You could say the content necessary that from the functional aspect of the Megillah, what's it functioning to do? It's functioning to judge the woman. So you would include anything that has to do with her being judged. So that would include both the overt klala and even the implied one. Because in that pasuk, there are two outcomes. There's both the positive outcome, which means nothing happens to her, and then the implied negative outcome. So that's how he reads Ha'alos. He wants it to be a functional, I'm putting that in quotes, a, so to speak, functional idea of Alos. So what's the Gemara's question? The Gemara's question is, well, Rav Meir, what's the difference? How can you have a hay be a riboy and then a hay being a miyat, right? So what's the Gemara's answer? Hey degabe ribuya ribuyahi. Hey degabe de miyuta miyuta. What does that mean? What's that? How is that an answer? What are the two ways you can look at the function of a hay and a word in the Torah? We know it could be a riboy or a miyut, but the Gemara is saying something more than that. It's like this. I think what Rashi's bringing out is like this. I think what he's saying is that, see, there's two ways you can look at the hay, okay? If you look at hay as like a separate letter, right? And then what do Chazal do, right? They go along and then, in a sense, they, what do you call it? It's a separate letter that has in it characteristics of both being a miyut and a riboy. And then they could play this game. They could take the hay and attach it to a word and then say, well, listen, we'll determine whether or not it's a riboy or a miyut. But it's like its own separate letter, okay? But what's the hay doing to the... This is the key thing, and this is, I think, what Rashi's bringing up. But that's not how they look at it. What's the relationship of a hay to a word? You guys should know what you've read by now. What? In other words, the hay functions as a modifier. So if it's functioning as a modifier, right, what could it never do as a modifier? Well, no, obviously, right, that what else can't it do? In other words, it can never contradict the word it's attached to, okay? So in other words, what the Gemara is struggling with is that when we look at the hay, in other words, if the hay was its own separate, like, letter, and then what do Chazal do? They take the hay and they're like, okay, we're going to attach it to this word, right? But then that's what the Gemara's question is. But then it could be a riboy one day and a miyat the next day, right? Because it has in it both properties. But that's not how we look at a hay. If the hay is a prefix, then it's modifying the word. If it's modifying the word, as a modifier, what could it never do? Right? It can never contradict whatever the word's trying to tell you. Meaning, if the word is, the word has to lend itself to being either a miyot or a riboy. It can't be that the hay introduces something that goes against what the word is. You understand? That's a critical point in how the hay works, okay?